This is Greg Smith with the National Education Policy Center's Education Interview of the Month. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Ken Zeichner at the University of Washington, who has recently written a policy brief about the rise of independent teacher education programs and their implications for public schools, as well as for traditional college and university-based programs. Ken, what do you mean by independent teacher education programs?
Okay, independent teacher education programs are a subset of alternative teacher education programs. These are programs that are run entirely independent of colleges and universities, whereas other alternative programs either partner with colleges and universities or are within colleges and universities.
How long have these independent teacher education programs been in existence?
For about the last decade, philanthropy has been putting a lot of money into the expansion, the development and expansion of these independent programs. So it's only been within the last 10 to 12 years or so that we've seen the emergence of these programs that are totally independent of higher education institutions.
So what has been the justification for the creation of these programs?
There have been several factors that have been involved. There has been longstanding criticism of college and university teacher education, some of which is justified and some of which is not. So justification has been essentially that college and university preparation, which provides about 80% of the teachers in the United States, even today, with the growth of these programs, has failed to provide schools with a diverse teaching force and a competent teaching force that stays over time. The investment of philanthropists and U.S. Department of Education has been in creating these other programs that are allegedly going to provide enough teachers and a diverse teaching force and competent teachers who will address the current teacher shortages and lack of diversity in the teaching force.
So what programs in particular did you study?
I studied five particular independent programs that had received a lot of attention in the media and have in some cases received a lot of funding from both government and philanthropic sources. And these programs are Relay Graduate School of Education, Match Teacher Residency in Massachusetts, I Teach, with a particular focus on I Teach Texas, although it exists in a couple of other states. Teach Now, which is an online program developed relatively recently, and High Tech High Internship Program, which is an independent program that was developed by the High Tech High Charter Schools in California.
Why did you choose to investigate these particular programs?
These programs appear to be ones that if there were any evidence about the quality of these programs, they would be likely to be associated with these programs in terms of the attention that they had received. And two of the programs in particular, Match and Relay, had been making claims about the allegedly high quality of the teachers prepared through their preparation. So the purpose of the policy brief was really to look at the quality of the evidence that stands behind these claims about excellence for independent programs.
So what's the relationship between these programs and the charter school movement?
Independent programs include both programs that are not connected at all to charter schools, like Teach Now, and programs like High Tech High and Match Teacher Residency that are essentially were developed and are run by charter schools, largely to prepare teachers for their particular charter schools. But now, at least the Match Teacher Residency and the Relay, which Relay was created by three charter networks that banded together, are now preparing teachers for other charter schools and public schools around the country. And so the connection to charter schools is very significant, and the growth of charter schools in particular areas of the country has helped stimulate the growth of these independent programs. There's a connection there.
You've suggested that these programs are, in many respects, somewhat problematic. What would you say are some of the primary reasons that you see them as posing some serious challenges to the way that we think about education in the United States?
We've always thought of public education as having multiple purposes, providing social mobility, preparing citizens who actively participate in a democracy, and so on. But the programs that I looked at that claim to present some evidence about the success of their programs focus very narrowly on the ability of graduates of these programs to raise standardized test scores. And so it changed the conversation about the quality of teacher preparation and the purpose of schooling, purposes of schooling connected to it, to the singular focus of raising standardized test scores as a measure of success. And so I think that's very troubling to me in terms of the kinds of multiple goals that we've historically associated with public schools. And so I find that troubling. The question of how do you evaluate the quality of a teacher preparation program moved away from what I think a lot of researchers believe is a sort of a responsibility to examine a variety of outcomes and to look at both the costs and benefits of particular approaches to preparation, not just looking in a narrow way at how can programs raise the standardized test scores of teachers prepared through those programs without looking at other educational outcomes and about the costs of doing preparing teachers in particular ways.
You've also raised some concerns just about the impact that this might have on the professional status of teachers, suggesting that both law and medicine are clearly seen as tightly linked to university preparation. So what might your fears be of moving teacher education outside of the university and college setting?
I'm not as concerned about that per se, because it could be done in a way that maintains the professional integrity of preparation. I'm concerned about moving it outside together with some of the rhetoric that we've seen from these programs about, for example, saying that there's a choice to be made between either theory or practice, and you can't do both. Although some of these programs have sort of modified that language in the last couple of years in response to some criticism of that. A lot of these programs, particularly Relay, to be specific, has argued that a lot of what universities have done in terms of providing theoretical and contextual preparation for teachers is non-essential, and that a focus, an intense focus just on getting them to be able to enact certain practices is all you need. When I think it's an artificial separation. You can't run a professional program by just focusing on practices. They've also argued, and it's now reflected in the Teacher Preparation Academy provision in federal education law, which, and Relay helped create that provision, that the faculty and teacher preparation programs need not have terminal degrees, an EdD or a PhD in the case of education. And so I think you could focus on practice, which universities are doing more of, without sacrificing the sort of theoretical integrity of the preparation. And so that the complaint that I have is that they've made it an either or choice and have come down on the side of practice. And my feeling is that that sort of reduces the role of teachers more toward the technician end of the continuum, as opposed to teachers as professionals who exercise judgment and have adaptive expertise to learn and continue to learn in and from their practice over time.
So you would see that the loss of attention to theory would be likely to make it more difficult for teachers to make kind of independent judgments and act, again, as more than technicians in the classroom. You also raised concerns about the studies that are kind of used to justify the existence of these programs. Can you say more about that?
There's essentially no research that's been vetted independently that supports the claims of the two programs of the five that actually make those claims, Relay and Match. They have produced a set of data on their own. In the case of Relay, it's based on their own internal analyses of how much their teachers can raise test scores while in the program. And they have this master's presentation at the end. And they put that data together and they put that forth saying things like the average number of years a Relay teacher at the end of the program can raise standardized test scores in reading or math. And then they just put that on their website. There's a section, public information. And that's not research. It's not independently done. It's never been vetted in a process of peer review, which is sort of a baseline condition for evidence that should be considered for influencing policy. And so my concern is there's really a lack of any credible evidence to support the claims that are made by those two programs about the efficacy of their preparation. The other three programs did not make those claims. They have satisfaction surveys from graduates and people who hire their graduates, but those are very limited. That's not, most teacher education programs around the country can produce their own satisfaction surveys and testimonials, but there's very little high quality research across all kinds of programs that shows the impact of particular kinds of conditions in teacher preparation. And these two programs continue to make these bold assertions about the evidence that supports their claims. And those assertions are repeated over and over again in the media in a process of echo chambers so that after a while, people begin to believe what's being said. But when you look closely at what they actually present, it's really not, there is no evidence that supports their claims. And I think that's critical.
So can you say more about how some of these programs who kind of say that they're basically operating in ways that help lower income and oftentimes non-white students become more successful, how they are in fact kind of creating more inequity in education in the United States than might be the case otherwise?
I think there's clear evidence that an obsessive focus only on raising standardized test scores is connected to a narrowing of the curriculum so that you begin to create a two-tiered system where certain kids have access to a rich and broad curriculum and to authentic interactions with knowledge. And then certain kids spend a lot of time prepping and focusing on standardized tests. And sometimes associated with the obsessive focus on standardized tests are very harsh disciplinary practices. And there is some research in charter schools in Philadelphia that shows the negative psychological effects on kids of some of these harsh disciplinary practices that may be associated with, you know, increased attendance of kids or even increased test scores, but at a certain cost. And so I think my concern is you begin to make more common this two-tiered system where you have middle class and upper middle class kids going to schools where they have science labs and they have IB programs and they have all access within the public's and charters to all kinds of interesting things in the curriculum, and where you send teachers who have been trained very narrowly just to raise test scores. You have sort of a very rigid kind of education that many of the advocates of these programs would not want to subject their own children to. And so it's very concerning. You see it in many parts of the world where there's, in some countries, the public schools are only for those who can't afford anything else. The poorest of the poor economically, and we're beginning to move more in that direction. We've always had these gaps in how much we spend on kids' education and the level of experience of teachers in different kinds of schools and so on. But now we're really sort of preparing more and more teachers in very narrow ways. And these teachers are teaching almost exclusively. In fact, I would say exclusively in schools and communities highly impacted by poverty. And many of the students are students of color living in those communities. Whereas I think in other parts of the public school system and in some charter schools, you have access to a rich and broad curriculum. And so that's my concern.
So, even though that may well be the case, isn't it also true that traditional teacher education programs in the United States have not been very successful in preparing their graduates to work with diverse students? The discriminatory practices that characterize the society as a whole have not been eliminated in schools. Given that, doesn't it make sense to kind of allow for the experimentation that's happening in some of these independent teacher education programs, especially like, programs at the that High Tech High has created?
Yes, I mean, university teacher education has not supplied public schools with teachers who want to go and teach in a place where they're needed and stay there over time and are successful. So there is a problem in the university system, but I don't believe it can be solved by creating narrowly prepared teachers who go in only to raise test scores. I think there are other things that both the university programs and the independent programs are not doing that they should be doing. In terms of preparing teachers to go in and work with and for the communities they're in to help raise the quality of education. And I see in a lot of cases, both the independent and university programs see their goal as preparing teachers to go in to save kids from their communities. And so there's really things that both the university system and the independent programs and other alternative programs need to be doing that's not going on now. I'm not opposed to innovation. The idea of alternative certification has been true for most of the history of teacher preparation in the United States. That's not an issue. The idea of programs operating outside of the university system is not new. Generally, we've had high schools in the United States, for example, played a major role in teacher preparation in the mid-19th century. And so it's not the alternatives, the experimentation, the attempts to innovate, but it's sort of the narrative that universities have failed and the solution lies in these programs, many of which do this narrow preparation. You're right, High Tech High has a very different kind of preparation. They're outside of a university system. They're in a, connected with a charter network. And that's not the issue. The issue is, what is the substance of the preparation? Does it prepare teachers as professionals to exercise their judgment? Teachers who see themselves as working over a career, not just for a few years. What is the kind of commitment to the communities that they're in? And what do the programs do to prepare people to go into communities where the students they're experiencing have very different life experiences than many of the teachers going in? And so those, sometimes what I say is interpreted as being against the existence of these programs. That's not the issue. The issue is, for me, again, there are claims being made about success and there is no evidence. And we need to look at a variety of outcomes and the costs and benefits associated. And we need to address the things that neither the university programs or the independent programs are doing very well now. I'm not saying that the status quo is acceptable, because it's not.
So how could you imagine transforming traditional programs so that there wouldn't be this kind of widespread call for their replacement?
Okay, we've had a situation, I alluded to it before, with, you know, we have tremendous amounts of money that have gone from philanthropy, from the U.S. Department of Education, and from states, going into the development and expansion of these independent programs. We've had, in the last decade or more, a huge disinvestment in public universities in that do most of the teacher preparation in the United States. And we're not supplying them with even the minimal resources they need, let alone resources to support innovation. Same problem with the school districts. There are countries that support school districts in providing clinical placements for teacher candidates. We have school districts all over the country that are in deep financial trouble. Even in Seattle, with all the money here, there's a deficit of $73 million this year in a city with, you know, huge amounts of money from corporations like Amazon and Microsoft and Boeing and so on. If we're going to do teacher education well, we need to shift some resources to the public universities and into the school districts to be able to support high quality teacher preparation. So that's one major thing that can be done with certain conditions attached. Not here's the money and do whatever you want, but I think we need to promote. We know some things about high-quality teacher preparation from research that's been done, sort of the characteristics of programs that make a difference. And we need to promote those things, but not only looking at independent programs as a solution. They prepare, even with the hundreds of million dollars that have been invested in the last decade, they still prepare, again, approximately 12% of the teachers. And so the 80% of the preparation that's taking place in public universities, those universities have been starved of resources, including their teacher preparation program. So that's a huge problem that needs to be addressed right away.
If those resources were made available, what would be the kinds of things you would encourage teacher education programs to do? You talked about like high quality teacher education programs. What are the desirable characteristics of those programs, and how could we be attempting to create more of them?
Well, I think we're seeing examples of some of those right now in terms of some of the teacher residency programs that are being funded. That's one thing that the Department of Education has done that I think is a positive step in terms of funding these programs that are more responsive to needs of districts, that involve universities and schools, and in some cases, communities, the local communities that are served by these schools, and in a few cases, the teachers' associations. So it's not just a partnership with the school district, but also the teachers' associations, to create these hybrid programs that are very contextualized in terms of the needs of particular educational systems. So when you look at residencies such as the Boston Teacher Residency, San Francisco Teacher Residency, the Seattle Teacher Residency, and so on, you see, I think, the kinds of things that reflect a lot of what we know about successful preparation. It's not the sort of we're doing practice and we've gotten rid of the theory, as we've seen in the rhetoric from some of the independent programs. And it's a shared responsibility for the preparation of teachers. It's not just giving universities the money to do what they want. It's there, when I say there's certain conditions on it, it needs to be a shared responsibility with the schools and with the local communities, who I believe have really been neglected in both traditional university programs and in the independent programs. The communities are sort of left out. It's like programs coming in, Relay arrives in a location, and they have a program. That's like the relay programs in all their other locations. There's 15 sites now for their teacher preparation programs. Programs need to be responsive to the conditions in local communities, and the people who live in those communities need to have a role in the process of preparing teachers for their communities. And so we're, you know, the, if we could expand those kinds of programs that sort of force a shared responsibility for the preparation, I think that's one positive direction that we could do more of.
So in addition to increasing resources for traditional teacher education programs and finding ways to link those programs more closely to specific communities, do you have any other recommendations for policymakers with regard to dealing with the independent teacher education program movement?
I think the problem is we're seeing all the money continuing to go into expanding this segment of teacher preparation and sort of an abandonment of colleges and universities. And based on these claims that are being made from internal research, poorly conducted research, and so on, and they're being used as justifications. And so I think we need to keep funding a variety of pathways into teaching, you know, so we could do some, you know, honest and legitimate innovation and experimentation rather than what we're seeing now, which is sort of a foregone conclusion that this university system is broken and then we need to build a new teacher education system in its place. I can't imagine a system for preparing 3.6 million teachers in the United States that does not have a strong role for colleges and universities. There's no way that this independent system is going to be able to meet the needs for teachers in the United States because of the size of the occupation. So we need to distribute the funding more across trying to improve different approaches to preparation and learning from honest and legitimate research about the efficacies of those approaches, not these sort of self-serving claims that are being made and asserting evidence when there really isn't any. There was another example recently in Wisconsin where the American Board for the Certification of Teacher Excellence, another independent way of certifying teachers, it's not really a preparation program, but there was money put into the state budget in Wisconsin based on a study that had been done, paid for by the program. It was basically just a survey, a bunch of surveys of graduates and principals, and it was really a study would have not passed a test of any sort of peer review, even in a mediocre journal. And so that was being used as sort of evidence. And so we need to be smarter about the ways that policy examines research and uses research as a basis for, you know, making certain policy decisions. There's been a lot of cherry picking of research to support things that people want to do. So that's another area that really needs attention, is to really fund research about a whole range of alternatives and then to be more careful about relying on research that has been vetted through a process of peer review.
Well, many thanks, Ken, for sharing your insights about this issue. And thanks to our listeners for being with us for this podcast. December is National Education Policy Center's Interview of the Month. Will be with Dr. Jeannie Oakes. That conversation will explore the creation of community schools that strive to establish much closer relationships with other local agencies to meet the needs not only of children, but of their families. We invite you to join us again for another podcast.